listening to Rebel Transmission.
Imperial troops have entered the base. Imperial troops have entered...
A Star Wars Rebels podcast for news, rumors, and discussion.
It's them. Blast them.
Right now I feel like I can take on the whole Empire myself.
Hello, I'm Sky Guy Pat, and welcome back to our Star Wars Rebels podcast, Rebel Transmission, where we bring you all of the latest news and speculation on the new Star Wars animated show from Lucasfilm Animation. As always, I'm here with my co-host and brother in the Force, Andy Peachy. How's it going, Andy?
It's good. I am glad to be here discussing Star Wars Rebels. So much news coming out at the moment. So, you know, we're not going to get through all of it today, but over the next couple of podcasts, we'll be discussing everything that comes out. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Definitely, man. Right on, sir. Let's get right to it, man. So on this, our second podcast, we're going to be talking about the Star Wars Rebels panel that took place at WonderCon 2014 a couple of weeks ago. The panel featured none other than Rebels executive producer extraordinaire Dave Filoni, as well as art director Killian Plunkett, and the very talented Vanessa Marshall, who will be providing the voice for Twi'lek pilot Harrison Dula on the upcoming series. Also, we have a bit of news on the expanded universe front. And for our discussion portion of the show, we will be taking a closer look at the characters of Kanan Jarrus and Ezra Bridger. This discussion will actually be the first of a three-part series where we will be talking about all of the Rebels characters that have been introduced thus far. And with that, let's head over to the Rebel transmission we've intercepted over the galactic airways. So yeah, WonderCon 2014 a couple of weeks ago. As mentioned, there was a panel for Star Wars Rebels there that consisted of Dave Filoni, Killian Plunkett, Vanessa Marshall, and hosted by David Collins. First off, Kevin Kiner, the composer who did the music on The Clone Wars, was the panel's special guest, and it was announced that he will be returning to do the music for Star Wars Rebels. It was mentioned that the music would be much more like the music in the movies and sound specifically a bit closer to what we heard in A New Hope. There is an interview clip with Kevin Kiner that was released around the same time as the panel. We actually have it posted on our Star Wars Rebels Facebook page for those who haven't seen it yet. And it's very interesting stuff. Kevin talking a bit about himself, the influence that the great Star Wars composer John Williams had on him, as well as a look at his creative process. So the new theme song for Rebels was also played at the event. And having heard it online, we definitely agree that the music of John Williams and the original Star Wars score is a major influence on the theme. Also, Coruscant will be mentioned, but perhaps not visited in the new series, much like in the original movies where we assumed there was an Imperial capital but never saw it until the end of Return of the Jedi on the special editions, of course. The famous planet will not be a part of the visual setting in Rebels, it seems, a big departure from what was seen in The Clone Wars. And as talked about in our first show, Star Wars Rebels is to definitely have a look inspired by the likes of concept artist Ralph McQuarrie and be more of a story about a cohesive band of characters working together on missions rather than a grouping of sometimes random individual stories. Spectators were also treated to a number of original concept sketches for Harrison Dula. Some of these can again be seen on our Facebook page. Also, an exclusive Star Wars Rebels clip was revealed to the audience featuring Hera piloting the Ghost while conversing a bit with Chopper and taking down some TIE fighters in the process. Let's check out the audio on that, actually.
Oh, he said that, did he? Do I have to do everything myself? Just reduce Kanan's targets by half. Tell our fearless leader he should be able to handle one lone TIE fighter on his own. What was that?
So yeah, cool. Got to hear some of the music as it will appear in Rebels there. Looks and sounds great, and we're very excited for the things to come. And I also think that Star Wars fans will be pleased with all the awesome stuff Star Wars Rebels has to offer. Andy, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I agree. I think it sounds awesome, especially the theme music that Kevin Kiner has composed, using a mix of John Williams' sort of sound cues from the various movies from the original trilogy. I don't know about you, it does sound like a bit like a kind of squashbuckling kind of pirate theme, almost like, I don't know, Pirates of the Caribbean or Captain Pugwash.
Right.
Sort of in that middle section. But it sounds good, and I think it goes well with, as I say, like the squashbuckling theme is definitely something very inherent in Star Wars, so I think it's going to go well.
Yeah, definitely. I picked up on that too, a bit of the kind of piratey kind of swashbuckling in the middle there, and it's definitely, I think, plays in well with what they're, you know, trying to go with for the series, and of course, like you said, you know, it's Star Wars has always been a big kind of a fairy tale in space adventure, yeah, type of a concept. So I mean, I think the music between the John Williams influence and kind of its own thing with what Kevin Kiner's doing with it is, you know, it sounds like it's going to be really awesome and be great for the series.
Definitely. It's one of those things for me. It's just, it's got stuck in my head. You know that. It's just one of those songs, and it's, yeah, it's cool. It's good. I like it.
And now on to the news on the Expanded Universe, No More EU and New Legends line. Well, the Expanded Universe, or EU as many of us know it as, line of books have officially been deemed non-canon by Lucasfilm, and the stories will now fall under a Legends line. They will become folklore, if you will, amongst the canon stories of the Star Wars universe from here on. The official press release from Lucasfilm states, "In order to give maximum creative freedom to the filmmakers and also preserve an element of surprise and discovery for the audience, Star Wars Episodes 7 through 9 will not tell the same story in the post-Return of the Jedi expanded universe." It goes on to say, "While the universe that readers knew is changing, it is not being discarded. Creators of new Star Wars entertainment have full access to the rich content of the expanded universe. For example, elements of the EU are included in Star Wars Rebels. The Inquisitor, the Imperial Security Bureau, the Sonar Fleet Systems, our story elements in the new animated series, and all these ideas find their origins in role-playing material published in the 1980s. So as of now, the only official Star Wars canon are the movies, that's episode 1 through 6, the Dave Filoni Clone Wars series, our beloved upcoming Rebels series, and the future books that have been announced thus far. Now, I do see how this could be a hard, bitter pill to swallow for some, truly. I don't really know what to say other than it seems very specific to me that Lucasfilm will indeed be cleaning the slate when it comes to the EU and continuing on in a one-universe, all-canon direction with new material. Oh, and that's past and future EU, by the way, not just post-Return of the Jedi, but all era, despite the denial of some, who are desperately, I know, trying to hang on, but sorry, it seems that it is what it is. You know, now stated by Lucasfilm in the press release, the EU isn't being discarded or completely forgotten and could still be used perhaps in one form or another in future canon, maybe. So in that sense, the stories will all still be there as non-canon legends, hence that Legends banner, and will take the form of folklore within the true history of Star Wars, if you will, that may or may not be true. And if they were to bring, say, Mara Jade, my favorite Legends character, by the way, and one of my favorite Star Wars characters of all time, really, or any other characters created for the EU novels into canon, the creators wouldn't have to follow any specific guidelines as per the Legends line. She could technically pop up in any era as a character of any age and all, though I think it's safe to say that if they do that, the creators will still keep the character's fundamental attributes and such, their basic nature and demeanor and all. And it's just that the story surrounding them will likely perhaps be a bit different. So yeah, basically it wipes everything clean as far as the whole EU is concerned, but still leaves those ideas open to maybe be picked from in some way for future canon, with no promises being made, of course. And it's not an alternate universe or anything, really. It's Legends. They want one universe to work from rather than two, with no loose ends being left. I believe Lucasfilm and many fans see this, and rightly so, as a win-win type situation. The future canon is open and unknown, but the legendary stories of the EU are still there to love and cherish. A myth within the myth, if you will. And I, for one, love the EU books, games, and other various materials, or the former EU that is now known as Legends, which, again, I love the concept of, and honestly, always kind of saw them as. And personally, you know, my first introduction to it, and still favorite part of it, is the tabletop Star Wars RPG game. So I'm really glad to hear that they're bringing in some of the RPG material into canon. And in Rebels, no less. So how can I ask for anything more, really? So, all right, Andy, I've talked enough here about this. So if you have any more thoughts on the EU being rebranded as Legends and the way Lucasfilm is approaching the future with a single connected storyline and such?
Not really. I'm glad it's happened. Definitely. I think the writing's been on the wall for a long time now because, you know, Hasbro have been told not to create any more expanded universe figures other than the ones that they've already done, such as Mara Jade and Buster the Shan, Darth Plagueis. You know, that kind of came down, and the fact that until recently we had no clue as to what other novels were coming out this year or next year, other than that Luke Skywalker one, which was originally going to be the last part of the Empire and Rebellion series. Obviously, it's something different now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's a good thing in the long run, because the novels are now going to have a much tighter relationship with the movies, the on-screen content, and they are 100% within canon. It was always kind of a bit of a grey area before.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it kind of, you know, made for a lot of debate between what was canon and not canon. This kind of ties everything together, basically, and I think in a lot of ways maybe even will tie the fandom, you know, together. And also, I've even heard some people say, like, hey, you know, I never knew where to start with the EU before, and you know, this like, they're excited about this now. They're saying, like, I can start reading the books now. I can always go back and read the Legends, of course, as they are, but now they feel like there's a place they can really start from, and it's canon. It goes with the story, what they know. So, yeah.
Yeah, and in terms of Episode 7 as well, I think it just means if you're, excuse the pun, we're all starting on the same page. You know, no one's going to go into it knowing, you know, a heck of a lot more than someone else.
Right.
So it's completely blank slate for everyone, and we can view the film on its own merits rather than comparing it, you know, to whatever novel it might have been loosely based on if they had gone, you know, down the route of translating the expanded universe and sort of visualizing it on film. I don't think that was ever going to happen, but
no, I didn't either. You know. Like I said, when the books came out, honestly, and I'm, like I said, a huge, you know, fan of the former EU and now the Legends line, you know, but I, from the get go, I don't know if it was just what it was about the books. I thought they were great books. I loved them, but I always kind of looked at them as a kind of like Legends within the legend, you know, the further adventures of. I never really thought they'd be made into movies. And then I started worrying down the line. I was like, wow, you know, some of the stories there are really good, and some of the elements, you know, could make for some good movies, you know, not denying that. But I was thinking, you know, well, if that's the case, then we kind of know the ending, you know, and also it's kind of like, well, and then of course there's always the, you know, within all fandoms where you have very dedicated, you know, members and such, it's, you know, there's going to be that picking apart, like, oh, I wish they would have done this and not that, or that or not this, or they followed this novel but not that one. So it just, I think it, you know, and I wouldn't want to be really in the shoes right now of the creators having to do this. You know, I know I don't think this is an easy thing for them, and I think they knew it would, you know, upset some fans, but I think as time goes on, you know, it'll all fall into place and really be a good thing in the long run. And again, those stories aren't going anywhere, and the creators still have them there to pull from in some form or another. And, you know, we also don't know exactly what the future holds, so that element of surprise is there.
Right, right. I mean, the title Legends, it's not a bad title.
Right, no, I love
it. Like, Yeah, the thing is, Lucasfilm, they don't have to keep on printing these books, but they are going to. They could have just discarded them, but they're not. You know, it's always going to be there for people who want to read them. It's not part of the official continuity anymore, but there's always a possibility of, as you said, elements from those Legends novels being brought in, which they already are. And that's even before Rebels has begun. So who knows what other elements they may be pulling in as we go through the series.
Exactly. I totally agree. The Legends will never die. They're always going to be there. And as far as the new stuff we talked about that's coming out that is going to be a part of canon, the new novels, we have A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller, Tarkin by James Luceno, Heir to the Jedi by Kevin Hearn, and Lords of the Sith by Paul Kemp.
Right, we have the description here for the Star Wars Rebels prequel novel, which is the one written by John Jackson Miller, and it's about Harrison Dula and Kanan. So here we go with the description. It says, the stage is set for the coming rebellion against the Empire. Kanan is a Jedi survivor of Order 66, refusing to wield his lightsaber ever again. He makes a living as a freelance pilot, keeping his head down to avoid any Imperial attention. But when the beautiful Harrison Dula sweeps into his life, at the same time his friends and his livelihood are being threatened by an Imperial plot, he faces the biggest choice of his life, keep hiding, or to make a stand and risk the wrath of the Empire. So yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. It seems like Kanan and Hera's relationship definitely goes back somewhat. What do you think of that, Pat?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from what I've seen in the introductions and heard and everything, I always kind of wondered if there was like going to be some things there between Kanan and Hera, and this kind of says like yes to that. Perhaps there's definitely a backstory there. It's going to be interesting to see what takes place here in this book, you know, before the series launches and really takes off, and also then to see how that relationship in relation to other things progresses as the series goes on.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to kind of be an example of tightening the connection between the novels and the series as well. I don't think it's going to be one of those situations where you'll have to read the novel to understand everything that's going on in the series, but I can see the series maybe referencing some points of the novel in a sort of way where, as I say, you don't have to have read the novel, but people who have read the novel will get that just that little bit more out of it, I think.
Yeah, totally. And that actually, to me, is kind of like where I think they might be going with the new books, you know, and like you said, you don't have to read it, but it offers a little bit more backstory. And since it's all canon now, someone can read these books and get a bit more depth into what's going on with the series and other stories as they unfold in other books and such. So
definitely, definitely. It's all going to connect together in a lot more of a significant way, as we were kind of talking about in the expanded universe section. So yeah, it's all good.
Awesome. Well, that's all the news for today. More to come as it's revealed by the creators. And now on to this episode's discussion. As mentioned earlier, this week we'll be beginning a three-part discussion going over the characters that have been introduced to us for the new Star Wars Rebels series. Today we'll be talking about Kanan Jarrus and Ezra Bridger, and first up is Kanan, the Cowboy Jedi.
Get back up there and fix the shields!
Well, Kanan, I like to call Kanan the Cowboy Jedi.
Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and I'm the voice of Kanan on Star Wars Rebels.
Kanan, I think, is the perceived head of this organization, of the crew of the Ghost, and when he tells you something, you gotta do it.
Don't stop! Push off now!
Kanan has a lot of secrets, and he is very guarded about his past.
He's a young man that's adrift. He has no structure.
What I really like about Kanan is the fact that he is a Jedi, but he's not a Jedi in the traditional sense that we've had before on the show.
He's a little bit more relaxed in the strict Jedi rules.
You know, he's a little more rough around the edges.
A strong character that has sarcasm.
How about a little less attitude and a little more altitude?
You suddenly have this cocky Jedi who's willing to shoot you as much as he is willing to, you know, get you with his lightsabers.
He's dressed pretty simply, but, you know, he's got the armor, so you could tell that he's kind of a fighter. The ponytail kind of harkens back to, you know, samurai.
Kanan is a Jedi that is very much in this time period between episodes 3 and 4 of the films, given up being a Jedi.
You know, was forced underground by Order 66, in essence, and hasn't acted as a Jedi.
He's kept his lightsaber locked away, so he hasn't used it in a long time.
He can't be obviously a Jedi, because if he is, he's going to get killed.
And he's sort of forsaken the Jedi ways when all the Jedi were wiped out.
He saw the destruction of his way of life at the hands of Darth Vader and the Empire. He doesn't know how they can move forward and survive now as Jedi.
I am time now!
You'll start to see Kanan's abilities grow as well as he's starting to use forces and things that he hasn't in a long time.
He's a gunslinger that needs to put the gun away and pick up a sword again and fight for noble causes and selfless causes.
Whether it's with a lightsaber or a blaster, he's always willing to help out and take on the Empire.
Kanan is pretty much the coolest guy in the universe.
Right, so Kanan is voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr., and he's been described as the leader of the Rebels and a cowboy Jedi, a character who has put his lightsaber away and forsaken his Jedi ways. He's a much less traditional Jedi. What do you think of this character, Pat, like from what we've seen so far?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll be watching all the characters, very interested to see what they're going to do with them, but, you know, Kanan is one of those that kind of really stuck out to me, and I'm very interested to see what's, you know, how his character is going to develop over time. Like I said, he seems to be kind of the quote-unquote leader of the group. And for me, kind of came off with a bit of a Cal Katarn-type look and attitude. He even wears the same type of armor and carries a blaster along with his lightsaber and such. So it's kind of, you get this idea that he just as soon shoot you as he would pull out his lightsaber, you know. And so also kind of like a character personality comparable a bit to maybe Qui-Gon and Han Solo and that sort of thing. And I mean, there's much speculation about his origins and such and how much exactly he knows the ways of the Force, as well as the history of the Jedi Order that disbanded. And he's a Jedi on the run as they're being hunted across the galaxy by the Empire.
Yeah, he seems like an amalgamation of a few different characters, but yeah, I can definitely see the kind of Cal Katarn. He's got that kind of roguish demeanor, like Han Solo as well, you know, which is more kind of a result of his experiences, particularly Order 66.
Yeah, and this being, I think it's also kind of going back to what we're saying, how, you know, Kurosawa and all that was one of the major influences on Lucas and those old samurai flicks and such. I think that also went a lot into the original designs of what Star Wars was going to be like, you know, at the very beginning. And since they're kind of going back to that very conceptual look of everything for the new series, I think it plays into that really well.
Yeah, a lot of the Jedi from the prequels in their early concept designs were really sort of samurai. They didn't actually go with that Obi-Wan Kenobi from A New Hope look straight away. They had, you know, a much more sort of samurai Eastern kind of influence. So it looks like they've kind of gone back a little bit with the Kanan character. But yeah, like you said, with his lightsaber design, he's got this sort of circular disc at the top of the saber, and it looks a lot like a samurai sword, I think, or like the samurai handle anyway. But yeah, it looks really cool.
Right, and I think that may also be a bit symbolic in his, you know, having both a blaster as well as a lightsaber. You know, he's kind of, now he's on the, that cowboy side of things. You know, he has a blaster and perhaps going more from that blaster to picking up that lightsaber again will be symbolic of him returning to those Jedi roots and picking up the path of honor, if you will, you know.
So yeah, even though he's got this kind of, as I say, sort of roguish demeanor,
right,
kind of turned his back on his Jedi ways, I think he does have this underlying Jedi morality, and those ideals are still inherent within his personality. The video does explain about Kanan having to pick up his lightsaber again and fight against injustice, which is kind of very much like the old archetype of, you know, that retired soldier who has to take up arms and fight against injustice, even though he's, you know, put that side of himself sort of behind him. And I think that's what we're going to get in Kanan's sort of initial story arc in the Rebel series.
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually a good point, because we'll talk about this a little more in the Ezra section. But Ezra is a force sensitive. He doesn't know it, but he is. And I think that Kanan's going to be the one that kind of hones in on that and, kind of takes him under his wing. So he'll have a bit of a apprentice master thing going there, and that might help him along as well, as far as, you know, I mean, I'm sure he'll forever be a maverick, talking about Kanan here. But going a bit from that more of a roguish kind of do my thing to kind of finding his way back on the path of the Jedi.
Yeah, I think it's going to start off in a very kind of shoot from the hip. You know, he doesn't really care too much, especially when it comes to Imperials. But as soon as he puts away the blaster, picks up the lightsaber, you know, we know that he's kind of going to come back into his own, and we're going to get into those kind of Jedi sort of teachings that he's put aside for now. But as he gets into teaching those to Ezra, you know, we're going to see that side.
Yeah, no, definitely. A lot of, like I said, a lot of speculation about his origins and what he knows, you know, and where he comes from exactly. You know, of course, we know he's a Jedi in hiding,
right?
But what that means, they come from very many different, see that from lots of different angles, you know. And, you know, definitely going to be interesting to see how his character develops and everything over the course of the series, and what he knows and what he's going to learn as well.
And sort of going back to the kind of Order 66 thing, I think it's going to be really interesting sort of going into his backstory and sort of seeing who he was at the end of the Clone Wars. You know, was he a Padawan? Was he a Jedi Knight? Mm-hmm. Who was his Jedi Master? Is it someone we knew from the series or from the prequels, even if it was a minor character? You know, there's all these kind of different aspects to his past, which is very interesting to me as a prequel fan as well.
Definitely, totally agree, and I do think that too about the connection to the Force and those that kind of stop using it. You know, they create a bit a distance, you know, between themselves and the Force and their connection to it and their abilities.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that sort of reestablishment of his connection to the Force, because I don't think we know this for sure, but I've always kind of seen if a Jedi stops using the Force,
right,
then
right.
He kind of slowly starts losing that connection. Even if his kind of teachings are kind of in place, his kind of outlook on life is still very much of a Jedi. If he stops using the Force, then that part of himself starts to gradually kind of move away from who he is. I think we'll sort of be seeing that as the series goes on.
Definitely, definitely. And also, like I said, I think that connection he'll have with Ezra as well is kind of teaching him the ways of the Force will maybe help to reestablish that connection and kind of take him back to where he left off, sort of, you know, as far as the path of the Jedi and his connection to the Force. And so, again, yeah, definitely interesting on how he's going to develop.
Right, that's it. It's all in the Clone Wars episode where Darth Maul, you know, he gets his sanity back and Savage hands him his lightsaber. At first, it's almost a bit difficult for him to use the Force to pull the lightsaber to his hand. And, you know, I definitely think that he's kind of been using the Force when he was going insane, because he was holding that whole spider creature that he kind of attached to himself. You know, that was all held together by the dark side of the Force. But that was more of an unconscious thing, I think, when he was actually using it in a certain way that he'd been taught. It was a bit more difficult. And I think a similar thing may be happening with Kanan, depending on how much distance he put away, put between himself and obviously using the Force in that way.
And now on to our second character in the spotlight this week, Ezra Bridger. Voiced by Taylor Gray, Ezra is a teenage con artist thief who is a street smart native of the planet Lothal and wears a customized Stormtrooper's helmet. Pretty cool concept, in my opinion, for a young, mischievous thief type character. Ezra is annoyingly Force-sensitive, much like Luke in A New Hope or Anakin in The Phantom Menace, as we talked about earlier with Kanan, and has used the Force instinctively in the past to get out of bad situations and whatnot. And with that, let's go to Ezra's introductory clip and hear a bit more about him by the creators themselves.
Look, I work alone.
Ezra's a kid that's been living on his own. He's a con artist, but he's only 14.
He's had a little rough, but he never really feels bad for himself. He's very street smart. He's a pickpocket. He's a little thief. But he's doing it all because he needs to survive.
Hey, the kid's gotta eat.
He's not a bad kid. It's just what you do in this time. He's not wealthy enough to be taken care of. He's not wealthy enough to get off the planet.
He doesn't really trust anyone. That's kind of his motto in life.
Why would I risk my life for a bunch of strangers?
People don't do that.
He has that kind of hard edge at times, but he knows how to turn on the charm when it comes to getting what he wants. And he's just very charismatic. Like, you'd want to, I feel like people want to be his friend.
Well, every little bit helps.
He's been outrunning stormtroopers and fighting against the Empire his whole life.
But he's not a rebel. That's not really what he's about yet. If he can steal from the Empire in small ways, great. He doesn't mind sticking it to them at all. In fact, he likes doing that.
He always wants to get his hands on some of their tech, take it apart, mess with it. He's always stealing their helmets. Because what kid wouldn't?
Ezra is like, I just have a soft spot for him because he is the first character we came up with for the show. I just am always rooting for him.
We see this whole series very much through Ezra's eyes. As his eyes get open to what the Empire is capable of, his eyes are open to the fact that there are people who care, who are trying to fight the good fight, and he becomes one of them.
When he meets Kanan and the crew of the Ghost, it's kind of this opportunity to have a family, so it's a great choice that he makes to go along with them.
To survive instinctively, every now and then when he's in a jam, he uses the Force. Now, he doesn't call it that. He doesn't know that's what he's doing. He thinks he's got some abilities that are a little strange every now and then, but they help him out. It's instinctive. It's reactionary.
And in Kanan, he also finds someone who can mentor him in a way.
They get thrown into that scenario without really realizing that they are being thrown into it.
They need each other. Ezra will never become a Jedi without Kanan, and Kanan will never reclaim his status and become a Jedi Knight without Ezra.
You doing okay, kid?
You kidding? This is a blast!
So, some more introductory information about Ezra there, and like executive producer Dave Filoni said, Ezra thinks he's got some abilities that are a little strange every now and then, but they help him out. It's instinctive, it's reactionary. So again, harkening back to a young Luke or Anakin who were Force sensitive without knowing it. And again, like we said, it's looking like Kanan is going to be honing in on Ezra's abilities and begin training him to some extent. To me, Ezra definitely seems to have a Robin Hood-like quality as far as sticking it to the Empire. Definitely kind of robs from the rich. Not sure how much he gives to the poor, but definitely, even if he seems a bit like his character's a bit untrustworthy of others, and he's in it for himself, you know, at the start of the series. He's not a bad kid necessarily, but definitely a kid who makes his own way and does his best to simply survive amidst the chaos of the Imperial occupation and all. So, Andy, what do you think about some of Ezra there?
He seems like a very sort of young Han Solo slash Anakin Skywalker type, sort of Han Solo, because like you said, kind of looks out for himself, at least at first, but perhaps that outlook on life kind of changes as he meets the crew of the Ghost and learns about his innate Force abilities, and sort of like Anakin Skywalker, because it looks like he kind of steals technology from the Empire, kind of uses that. Certainly he kind of steals the stormtrooper helmet we've seen him wear in some of the concept art. He's got this kind of slingshot he's kind of got mounted on his wrist, and I don't know if that's like modified or if he made it himself, but it wouldn't surprise me if he had. And I think that's a pretty cool thing, because obviously he's only a 14-year-old at this point. He's not a Jedi, so you know, he's got to defend himself somehow, and I think that's you know, quite resourceful, which is definitely an innate trait of a Jedi.
Yeah, so definitely seems to be something innate in him as far as that, you know, that Force sensitivity that Kanan will likely try to bring out more and more in him, and also just that survival instinct and his roguish nature. And again, Ezra's one of those characters going to be very interesting to see how he develops over time. And as you mentioned, another interesting aspect of Ezra's character is the introduction of a new weapon. I guess we can call it for now a type of a wrist-mounted energy slingshot, comparable perhaps to Chewbacca's bow blaster in the sense that it seems to be a technologically advanced version of a fairly simple, ancient-styled weapon. Basically, for those who haven't seen the pictures, Ezra's energy slingshot looks like an ordinary slingshot with the exception of having bands made of energy instead of, say, rubber. And also, he uses what appears to be some sort of energy bullets for ammunition and seems to be able to shoot them a fairly good distance as per some of the teaser footage. Also, Ezra is seen using a customized lightsaber of some sort. Again, I think going back to that innate force ability, its hilt looks a bit like that of a cutlass sword rather than the traditional lightsaber hilt. And I imagine this will likely play a role in his coming to terms as being a force sensitive in the training he will likely be going under by way of Kanan's tutelage. Also, Ezra can be seen wearing an orange jumpsuit, and in my opinion, that orange is very reminiscent of the colors of the pilot uniforms in the Rebel Alliance vest, as well as some sort of backpack gear at times. And so, Andy, what's your take on Ezra's accessories and stuff here?
Yeah, right. Well, I think the Rebel pilot, the orange kind of jumpsuit he wears is definitely reminiscent of the Rebel Alliance pilot kind of jumpsuits that we see in the original trilogy. And from the previews we've seen of some of the Lego sets, it does appear that Ezra actually pilots the Phantom, which is actually like a kind of small snub ship, I think, that kind of attaches to the back of the Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we're going to be seeing Ezra flying the Phantom, and obviously the fact that he's wearing a kind of jumpsuit, which, you know, quite similar to the Rebel Alliance pilots, I think, you know, it's going to kind of stir up that imagery of, you know, the kind of X-Wing fighters and the Y-Wing fighters that we saw in A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, it really plays into a bit of a pilot's gear look, definitely, especially, you know, the Rebel Alliance and everything that we saw in the original movies, so...
Definitely.
It kind of plays into that whole pilot look as far as the Rebel Alliance is concerned in the original movie. So definitely agree.
That's it. That's it. I think it's going to also be very interesting because, as you said, he's got this innate ability with the Force, and to kind of see that, you know, the power of the Force kind of being tempered through Ezra will be sort of really interesting to see, and how it kind of manifests itself through what kind of abilities he has, because it seems like every kind of young Force user can use the Force in a kind of, without having to be taught how to use it, they'll be able to use it in sort of in a different way, like Anakin was able to kind of have this kind of foresight of the future in certain ways. And maybe Ezra, I've seen sort of a teaser where he's kind of jumping out of the TIE fighter and almost looks like he's doing a force jump, so maybe he'll be able to do a few of the acrobatics that we see sort of Jedi and Sith doing at times.
Definitely, like Dave Filoni said, very instinctive and reactionary, you know.
Yeah, right. That's it. So, you know, maybe he kind of gets in a tight spot and he kind of force jumps out of there. It's more of a kind of reaction to things happening rather than saying, I'm going to force jump up there. Right. You know, it's... So I think that's kind of what we'll be seeing. And then, you know, as Ezra and Kanan kind of get together, you know, Kanan will be able to sort of teach him about what, you know, what he's actually doing at those times and, you know, what it is that he's kind of tapping into.
Right. There's that control aspect there. That's, of course, part control. Of the training. Control. Yes.
Must learn control.
Exactly. Yeah, and talking about the Force and Kanan and Ezra here, this brings up another thing, and that's the Force in this era. This opens up a door to the question of what it was like to be an unknown Force-sensitive or Jedi in hiding in this particular era, and will give a whole new dimension to the Force and what life was like during the dark times for those who had Force abilities and such. And as stated in the first episode, of our podcast. You know, the thing I love most about Star Wars is the Force and its many aspects, spiritual connotations. It's truly my number one thing in the saga and all, especially the Path of the Jedi. And some people have even asked me if I'm going to perhaps have an issue with the fact that Star Wars Rebels will be dealing with an era where the Force and Jedi are a bit of a kind of underground and minimal type thing, if you will. And my answer is an emphatic no, because as someone who loves the Force and its place in and history in the saga as much as I do, I'm very enthused to finally see this viewpoint of it during an era that is new to us, the viewers. And from what I understand, Star Wars Rebels will definitely be maintaining a spiritual side to it concerning the Force and all, seeing what it was like to be a Jedi or Force sensitive in this time period. So yeah, once again, I personally can't wait to see what's in store and find out even more info on my favorite aspect of Star Wars, the Force. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a good point there. You know, what was it like for Force sensitives in this era? Because, you know, we have been told through some different sources that they were hunted down by the Empire. And if we go back to the season 2 episode of The Clone Wars, where Darth Sidious, using Cad Bane, steals those Jedi holocrons, where he's able to locate, you know, Force sensitives throughout the galaxy. You know, the Empire has access to those Jedi holocrons, so, you know, I don't know if they have access to all of them. You'd sort of imagine that, you know, maybe the Empire can't get through all the kind of locks that the Jedi had on, you know, the most secretive ones. But we know he's at least got that one, so it'll be sort of interesting to see if the Empire are able to track down Force sensitives using those holocrons. And we've seen in some storyboards there is a holocron in the first few episodes at the very least, so, you know, it'll be interesting to find out more about those types of things and how the Empire, as I say, kind of tracks down these potential Jedis.
Yeah, definitely good point there. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the Empire knows about the Jedi and Force sensitives that are out there, you know, concerning the holocrons and everything. Like you said, there's one that's likely going to pop up perhaps in some of the first episodes. And, you know, the Empire's capability of hunting down the Jedis and various Force sensitives throughout the galaxy.
Right. Yeah, that's it. So, and as I say, you know, the Jedi Temple's got all that security coding, you know, that Yoda and Obi-Wan reference in episode 3. So who knows how far they got into that security coding and all that kind of stuff. But I think the Empire certainly, through, as we know, through the Inquisitor, has ways of tracking these people down. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see the show explore that.
Yeah, definitely going to be interesting to see. Another thing is like lightsaber duels in this era. Perhaps they're not quite as refined. I'm thinking likely much more instinctive and personalized by the user's comfort and individual technique. I'm thinking for those Jedi on the run with little to no lightsaber training, that it could be a bit like we saw with Luke Skywalker in the original movies, where he seemed to have some semblance of technique and control, most likely learned to some extent from Obi-Wan or perhaps even Yoda, but at the same time it had a very basic feel to it. Some of it I would even equate to, say, swinging a baseball bat at an opponent at times, or Vader in the case of Luke. So a fundamental, you know, controlled chaos, if you will.
Right, yeah, I can definitely see that, because Kanan probably wasn't a fully trained Jedi Knight, so he's definitely, I'm sure he's got some forms down. But yeah, when I don't think he's, you know, an Anakin Skywalker or a Count Dooku or an Obi-Wan Kenobi in terms of all the forms. So yeah, I think it will definitely be going back to that more original trilogy sort of vibe when it comes to the lightsaber battles.
Yeah, so definitely, yeah, the lightsaber battles may be less grand, if you will, but definitely, I think, hit it on the head there with it kind of harkening back to what we saw in the original trilogies and such. So definitely it'd be very interesting to see, along with everything else. All right, so that concludes our discussion this week on Kanan and Ezra. Thank you all so much again for joining us on another episode of Rebel Transmission. Be sure to tune in. We'll be talking about Twi'lek pilot Harrison Dula and Mandalorian explosives expert Sabine Wren. Also, we'll be talking about the full Star Wars Rebels trailer that will be premiering on May the 4th, Star Wars Day. So definitely some awesome stuff there. It's going to be a great episode, so be sure to listen in. Remember to write in with any feedback or suggestions and send in any fan art, cosplay, or other cool stuff pertaining to Rebels that you create or find. Our email address is rebeltransmission421@gmail.com. We love to hear from you, see anything you have, and help you to share it with the world. Thanks again, and we'll see you all next time. The Force lives. May it be with you.